From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. What do you know about tax havens? Switzerland, the Cayman Islands, the British Channel Islands, Virgin Islands, and many more, where well-mannered bankers help the rich and the super-rich cheat on their taxes, as in avoid them. It's big business, over $7 trillion, now secretly parked in over 60 havens on five continents. You could build some bridges, repave some roads, teach some kids, with the taxes on those trillions, help keep home countries strong, build up a poor continent like Africa, or a rich one like the USA. This hour on Point, the hidden wealth of nations and the secret trillions in tax havens. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you know exactly how this game is played? Can you believe the scale of it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Berkeley, California, is Gabriel Zuckman, 28 years old, an assistant professor of economics at UC Berkeley, a protege of and co-author with French economist Thomas Piketty, who's written so famously on rising inequality. Zuckman's new book, Turning a Lot of Heads, is The Hidden Wealth of Nations, The Scourge of Tax Havens. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Gabriel Zuckman, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You say there are now $7.6 trillion stashed in tax havens. Is that corporate money too, or is that just personal wealth, Gabriel?
That's only personal wealth. That's equities, bonds, bank deposits that very rich individuals put in bank accounts in the Cayman Islands, in Switzerland, in Singapore, in the main offshore private wealth management centers. And that's to give an idea of how big it is, it's the equivalent of 8% of the world's household financial wealth.
And that is a number that excludes real estate, which presumably is also big, and jewels and all that sort of stuff. Yachts, I guess.
Correct. It's only financial assets for the simple reason that we only, unfortunately, have data on this. What's important to understand is that people do not open bank accounts all over the world to leave their wealth in low-yield bank deposits. They also and primarily make financial investments. So they buy equities like U.S. equities or bonds like German bonds, mutual fund shares. And so that's what's included in these 7.6 trillion figures, all the portfolio securities, equities, bonds, mutual fund shares, and bank deposits held by very rich individuals offshore.
Now, these days, the idea of money moving around the world is not strange. It seems quite normal. But you're saying this isn't just money moving. It's moving to very specific targets, targets that are called tax havens, countries where it won't be, where it can avoid taxes, evade them.
Not all the wealth in tax havens avoids or evades taxes, you know, so it is legal to have bank accounts, you know, in foreign countries if you report these bank accounts and the wealth that's in it on your tax returns, you know, on your 1040s in the U.S. Now, the bulk of the wealth that's actually in those offshore centers actually is not reported on tax returns and so evades taxes. The reason is that banks in these countries have developed, some of them, not all of them, but some of them have developed just, you know, a tax evasion business where they attract rich residents from the U.S., from Europe, from Africa, from developing countries, and they offer them to manage their wealth while telling them we won't say anything to your home country tax authorities, or you're free to self-declare, but you're not going to declare your wealth to the IRS or other tax authorities. And by my estimate, about 80% today of the $7.6 trillion evade taxes or not reported on tax returns.
That's pretty enormous. $7.6 trillion just in personal wealth. 80% of that avoiding taxes, you're saying?
That's correct.
This amounts to a lot of the financial assets of different countries. I mean, even in a country with an economy as gigantic as the United States, I'm looking here at one of your calculations saying 4% of American financial assets are now held offshore. Canada, 9%. Europe, collectively, 10%. And then it really starts to grow. I mean, Latin America, 22%, Africa, 30% or more, Russia, 50%, the Gulf countries, 57%. You get into right. parts of the world where this is the norm.
Exactly, yes. 8% of the world's financial wealth in tax havens, that's a global average that conceals a lot of heterogeneity. For developing countries, the share of their financial wealth that's stashed offshore is enormous. And so that's why it's a key stake. It's a key problem for, you know, development. How do we make this wealth taxable? How do we count it? How do we observe it? How do we make it taxable? How do we make sure that it helps developing countries grow?
The scale of what offshore just seems to grow. I'm looking at a chart here where the amount stashed offshore just goes up and up and up. Look at U.S. equity market capitalization managed offshore has gone from down below 2% to up 9-10%. Why are these numbers growing?
So the offshore wealth management industry has developed a lot since the 1980s. So you're correct that with the data that we have, we can do the following computation. Look at the market value of all U.S. listed equities today, you know, equities of Microsoft, Apple, and so on. And then ask what fraction of this is owned by firms and individuals located in offshore tax havens like the Cayman Islands or Bermuda and so on. And the answer is today close to 10%. In the early 1980s, it was basically 1%, and it's been growing exponentially since the early 1980s. So there are a number of things going on. One thing is just the IT revolution. You know, it's just much easier to send funds abroad. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that I think there's been a big cultural change, in particular in the US and in Anglo-Saxon countries in general, whereby, you know, up to the late 1970s, it was not considered okay to try to aggressively avoid taxes or even illegally evade taxes.
People felt guilty or ashamed to do it. It was unethical.
Exactly. And then
it's still unethical, but it's not necessarily seen that way.
I think that the social attitudes towards tax avoidance and tax evasion have changed. Now, a growing fraction since the 1980s of the population considers it, you know, okay, if I can aggressively minimize my taxes, that's good. A small fraction of the population even considers it okay to really, you know, violate the law and illegally evade taxes. And that explains why offshore tax havens have been growing so fast since then.
But this avoidance or evasion angle is not easily available to regular people. I guess it may be if you're wealthy. I mean, if I want to avoid taxes, it's pretty tough. I can try and minimize them in some marginal ways, but I would have no idea how to stash a big chunk of money abroad and don't have a big chunk of money to stash abroad. This seems like the playground of the rich.
Yes, in a way, before, you know, you need to have about, you know, $20 million or more for offshore banks to become interested in managing your wealth. But, you know, if one day you
no wonder
cross
they
that
haven't
threshold,
called. Okay.
If you cross that threshold, you'll see that, you know, you receive offers from all these banks. They will tell you, you know, you can do this and that, you can, you know, minimize your taxes like that. But you're absolutely right that this is only and essentially a service that is sold to extremely wealthy individuals, to maybe the top 0.1% of the wealth distribution in the U.S. today. That is, you know, people with more than $20 million in total assets, net of debts.
To regular people who dutifully pay their taxes, this can be kind of infuriating. But what's the cost to, take the United States or take a developing country? What's the actual social or public cost of this, the problem?
Well, there are two types of costs, I guess. There's one direct cost in terms of lost government revenue, evaded taxes. So that's about $200 billion globally just for the evasion of taxes on the interest and capital gains and dividends earned on offshore accounts.
So that's you're talking annually or?
Annually, correct.
$200 billion a year. Okay, that's a chunk.
$200 billion a year at the global level. So that's the direct cost. The indirect cost is that these evaded taxes have to be compensated by higher taxes for the rest of us, for the middle class in the US and all over the world. So that means extra, you know, income taxes, extra property taxes, and so on.
Or else just services cut back on, maybe roads we don't pave or bridges we don't repair.
Exactly, or less public goods or growing deficit, absolutely. And the third cost is probably the most fundamental, is the risk that the very social contract that we have, the fiscal contract, is at stake. You know, if growing fraction of the population has the feeling that very big corporations or the wealthiest individuals are able to pay much less in taxes or much lower effective tax rates than they do, then there's a risk that the social contract that we have will, you know, the willingness to pay taxes might disappear. And that, I guess, is probably in the long run the main risk, and that's why it's so important to have a minimum, you know, amount of tax fairness, you know, same effective tax rates for small and big companies, progressive effective tax rates on income when you move up the income and wealth ladder.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the trillions of dollars now stashed in tax havens around the world, much of it by super rich, cheating on their tax obligations and leaving everyone else to pay the bills. Gabriel Zucman is my guest. His new book is The Hidden Wealth of Nations, assistant professor of economics at UC Berkeley, protege to the French economist Thomas Piketty, who wrote in 2014 so compellingly about global inequality and its rise and surge. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think of the scale of this? What do you think of the fact that it goes on? Are you shocked, or are you just assuming that this is how the other half lives and pays or doesn't pay its taxes? Why does the world let these places get away with hiding illegally all this money? Here's just a little bit of a tourism ad for the Cayman Islands in the Caribbean, a major tax haven.
The Cayman Islands asks, where will you find your smile? Along one of our breathtaking beaches? Or at one of our luxurious resorts? Wherever you find your smile, you'll find ours. That's Caymankind.
Where will you find your smile? Where will you find your money? Cayman Islands are Bradley Birkenfeld, worked for the Swiss bank UBS. He used to help wealthy Americans sneak their money out of the U.S. and into secret accounts in Switzerland. In 2007, he gathered up bank accounts and took them to the feds, blew the whistle, did 2.5 years in jail, got $100 million as part of a massive UBS settlement with the U.S. government. But here he is last April in an interview with CNBC talking about the rich American tax cheats he once served.
How many Americans had Swiss bank accounts?
19,000, just at UBS.
And overall? 50,000, 60,000?
Oh, more like 100,000.
100,000 Americans had secret Swiss bank accounts.
Correct.
And none of them have been named, or very
none
few.
Of them.
Very
and,
few.
And very few have been indicted. We're talking billionaires who had accounts. What happened to them? Nothing. Ty Warner, Beanie Babies, nothing.
Yeah.
Wrote a check.
Yeah.
Igor Alenikov, nothing. Wrote a check. That's justice?
That's justice, he says, and talking about those enormous numbers, all that money abroad. Gabriel Zucman, your title is The Hidden Wealth of Nations, a kind of allusion to the wealth of nations and Adam Smith. Is there a silver lining in this? Maybe this is capital accumulation. Maybe this is concentrations of capital that get deployed to make everybody better off. Maybe this is dark but necessary.
I don't think that's necessary. I think nobody, you know, is in favor of tax evasion. I think, you know, it would be much better if everybody paid, you know, its taxes as per the tax law. What I think, however, is that there is substantial progress, although more could be done, but there is substantial progress in fighting tax evasion. So I don't want to give the impression, you know, that nothing can be done and that there will always be, you know, very rich people evading taxes and so on. That's not true. I know actually the U.S. has been doing a lot in terms of securing the cooperation of foreign financial institutions, Swiss banks and, you know, banks in the Cayman Islands and so on, with what is known as the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, starting right now, there is going to be an automatic exchange of bank information between offshore financial institutions and the IRS. What it means is that offshore banks now are required to send every year the list of their customers who are U.S. citizens and the wealth that they have and the income that they earn on their offshore accounts, so as to make it possible for the IRS to assess, you know, taxes. And that's a huge progress, you know.
So maybe that's it. Maybe the problem's all finished up for the U.S. anyway. It's all done.
So that's more complicated than this. You know, there are two things. First, it's a huge progress, and then I'll try to tell you why it's not enough. But why is it first a big progress, and why it gives me hope is for the following reason. 10 years ago, if you asked any tax expert about the prospects for such an automatic exchange of bank information, all of them would have told you this will never happen. This is utopian. Mm-hmm. How do you force tax havens to cooperate? And now this is becoming a reality, not only in the U.S., but also in other rich economies. The European countries basically are following suit and are emulating the U.S. So that's a huge progress. Now, it's not, unfortunately, the end of the problem. Why? Because you cannot just, you know, politely ask the very people who benefit from tax evasion and financial secrecy, so offshore bankers, you cannot just politely ask them to send, you know, whatever information they have. What about, you know, what are their incentives to actually cooperate? You need to have clearly defined sanctions for tax havens that facilitate tax evasion, for offshore financial institutions that are engaged in this type of activity, and for the very bankers who do this. And that's what's lacking today. Even though there are some limited sanctions in the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, there's nothing like that in other countries. And so if it remains profitable for bankers, for tax havens to do this, to help defrauders, then, you know, this will continue. On the other hand, if it becomes risky and if it becomes very costly to do that, then, it, you know, this activity will disappear. And that's why I'm quite optimistic, because it's actually quite easy to put sanctions, you know, on tax havens. You know, the Cayman Islands, you know, it's sunny and, you know, it has lots of banks, but it's very small, you know, compared to the U.S. And the same is true for all the other tax havens in the world.
They don't seem too worried so far, with $7.6 trillion in personal wealth stashed there. Gabriel Zuckman's new book is The Hidden Wealth of Nations. Derek in Ferndale, Michigan. Derek, thanks for calling. You're on with Gabriel.
Hey, Tom. Well, I'm 29. My perspective is I've always paid my taxes, and I'm recently unemployed, and I elected to have my unemployment, have the taxes taken out immediately. Never mind that 80% of $7.6 trillion, you know, $5.5 trillion,
yep,
and the back taxes, what are they going to do about that? I'm frankly surprised nobody has hacked these names and numbers.
What, hack them, put them up online, along with Ashley Madison, to public shame the foreign stashers?
Yes. Yes. I mean, much more has been, you know, leaked, released.
Yeah.
You know, much, much more grave things.
Well, you can bet the Swiss bankers bury those names and those numbers very, very deeply, but then so did the NSA try to. Derek, I appreciate your call. Gabriel Zuckman, to your social contract, there's a piece of erosion right there. I mean, Gabriel, on now without a job and still paying his taxes first to do his bit, looking at this, and it's pretty disconcerting. What about public shaming of people who illegally send money abroad? We should be able to manipulate information, or is that off the table?
There's a little bit of it going on. You know, the IRS, for instance, publishes, you know, some particularly striking stories, named, you know, stories of offshore tax evasion. So there's a little bit of it going on. I don't know. I mean, what I think is, That can be part of the way to, of course, to make it more costly, you know, for the potential tax evaders themselves, name and shame probably. But this has to be part of a broader, you know, plan to make tax evasion costly for whoever is involved in it. So not only the tax dodgers themselves, but also the financial institutions and countries and bankers who are selling them tax evasion services. So that's what I think.
Lots of motivations at work here that work against completely breaking down the black boxes that are out there right now. Gabriel Zuckerman, please stand by in Berkeley, California. With us right now from New York is Christy Smythe, legal reporter with Bloomberg News. Christy, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
You have followed this, the UBS scandal about all that money that was funneled overseas, and a lot more. Is this still going on? If somebody's ship comes in and they've suddenly got $20 million or $100 million, are they going to get a call from some banker or, you know, intermediary somewhere saying, hey, let us help you move some of that offshore, out of sight?
Well, I don't know if it is happening quite as explicitly now. I mean, in the case involving UBS, what the U.S. alleged and what we prosecuted them for, or brought a deferred prosecution agreement with them over, was actually having a program of soliciting investments by coming over to the United States and saying, hey, we'll help you and we'll bring it back into Switzerland and we'll hide it under the name of offshore accounts. That's not happening as explicitly now, I don't think, because of all of the U.S. crackdown and, you know, the new laws and so forth. But there's still quite a bit of a more of informal process of moving assets overseas. And the U.S. is trying to go after that as well. As Gabriel was saying, the U.S. is doing quite a bit to try to lift the secrecy on some of these jurisdictions like the Cayman Islands and Belize and Panama and all these other places that offer secrecy is kind of their main selling point for moving your assets there. In some cases I've covered recently that were kind of that, you know, investigators were sort of led to as a result of these tax prosecutions. In some of these more recent investigations, we've seen charges brought against people known as incorporators who do all the sort of heavy lifting and the work for investors or wealthy people or whatever in terms of setting up entities which are by nature secretive in places like the Virgin Islands and the Caribbean. They use names of possibly even security guards or you know, other kinds of like minor characters who might be working for the incorporation firm, and as they put that down like on the documents to actually file paperwork, and there's no paper trail to really trace who owns the assets. So this enables any number of activities to occur that are sort of outside of our line of sight. In the more recent investigations, we have sent undercover investigators down to try to figure out what they were actually up to and what they're doing, like what these incorporators are doing, and found all sorts of interesting things.
You describe in one of your pieces, Christy Smythe, what investigators asking people who wanted to push money abroad to bring cash packed into a Louis Vuitton bag. Because they thought, well, that's so expensive, that'll give them credibility if they insist that it's in that kind of bag.
Yeah.
And they come to the Gramercy Tavern in Manhattan, and boom, they're caught. But not everybody is caught. A lot still goes on. Why do you think so much of this is going on, Christy? I mean, after all, Gabriel reminds us, you know, I mean, there was a time when the top 1% had maybe 7% of this country's wealth in the 70s. Now they have 22%, the top 1% of the nation's wealth. There's plenty of wealth accumulated. It's not as if they're desperately trying to hang on to the money. They've got a lot of it.
Well, I am sure if you talk to anybody who's made money, they want to keep as much of it as they can. I don't think anybody likes paying taxes. I think we all sort of acknowledge that's a public good and it should happen. And in some cases, people operating out of these offshore jurisdictions who are helping hide the money, they don't necessarily think they're doing anything illegal either on behalf of their clients. They think they're just taking advantage of the laws as they're written and helping to minimize taxes. They describe it as tax minimization. So, you know, and who's to say, you know, trying to minimize your taxes? Lots of us try to minimize our taxes. We donate to charity. We do lots of other things.
Mm-hmm.
who's to say it's illegal? And until, of course, the U.S. says it's illegal, then, well, you know, then it's probably.
Then watch out. Carl in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Carl, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes. I think, you know, there's a pervasive unthankfulness all around, and everybody, I think a lot of folks would do it if they were able. The average working Joe has to pay his taxes. It comes right off the top. But, you know, and I'm going to tout for my senator, Bernie Sanders, who's running for president.
Yeah.
And I think he's got something. If enough people get fed up with it and demand a change, now it's going to start hopefully at the ballot box, but it could get, you know, it could get ugly. People are getting away with taking the livelihood and like you said in the beginning about roads and bridges and infrastructure that's not getting replaced. There's going to be a tipping point eventually that is going to get catastrophic, I think. But
let's hope not catastrophic, but certainly it's not a bad target for attention. That is for sure. Carl, I appreciate your call. I mean, in that same tape on CNBC from Bradley Birkenfeld, who used to be with the UBS, he talked about a special group or desk they had there to handle extra-sensitive accounts of politicians in this country. It's called the PEP desk, the PEP desk for politically exposed persons around the world and in the USA, people in that position who wanted to stash money abroad.
The PEP would be someone who had political influence or was a high-profile person within some sort of power within a government.
Right.
It could be a judge, it could be a senator, could be a mayor, could be a general, could be a president, could be a dictator. It was another level of secrecy. And that PEP desk covered PEPs out of Washington, D.C.
Out of Washington?
Yes.
Political figures in Washington?
Correct.
Had accounts in Zurich?
That's correct.
And those names have never been made public?
Never.
Talk about galling. Christy Smythe, is the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act, FACTA, is it changing the climate around this? Do you think these numbers are going to come down, at least in terms of American money headed overseas, or is it coming down already because of the crackdown?
I think that's the hope. It's certainly makes it a lot harder to hide your assets overseas because, you know, you can be sanctioned if you don't report what you have somewhere else. Or, you know, banks can be sanctioned if they are not reporting what they have from you know, U.S. taxpayers. So there is some concern that possibly the money may be moving around. It may be moving more out of Switzerland to places like Belize or elsewhere and through more informal networks. You know, people have money has a way of going to the place of path of least resistance. So there could be some of that happening. But that is, I think, part of the initiative and the goal of bringing these undercover investigations and cracking down through that means, you know, it's kind of opening like a separate front on this problem. So the hope, I think, is if you do enough of these and they're, you know, moderately high profile, other incorporators or other people who work in this industry, they get the message and they say, like, look, this is the U.S. is after us. In one of the cases I covered, it was noted in the court filings that investigators learned that the incorporators, you know, they knew about FATCA and they were trying to figure out ways around it. So the message is getting through that the U.S. is coming after this. I don't know if it'll ever completely shut down, if there's always some way around a law or something, but I think, you know, there's a good chance it'll go down.
Christy Smythe, legal reporter with Bloomberg News. Thanks for spending a minute with us from New York today, Christy. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the trillions of dollars, trillions, now stashed in tax havens around the world, much of it by super rich, often cheating on their tax obligations and leaving everyone else essentially to pay the bills. What do you think about the scale of what Gabriel Zucman is laying out in his new book, The Hidden Wealth of Nations? And what do we do about it? Is enough being done in this country now when you hear that a third or half of the wealth in Africa is stashed abroad? What does that tell you about their development prospects? Here's an old TV commercial from the sneaker maker Reebok. It features now retired NBA player Allen Iverson. He says a great jump shot can get you a lot of fancy things. And he goes on to say none of those things can get you a great jump shot, but listen to his list.
A shoe deal. A supermodel. A big house. Fancy cars. A bunch of yes men. And a Swiss bank account.
Okay, and a Swiss bank account. Thank you, Allen Iverson, for the suggestion. Sharon in Boston, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I have lived in France for 12 years. I did live in France for 12
okay.
years. And during that time and afterwards, since I have a French husband, I have been privy to and witnessed a tax evasion scheme spread over 30 years put in place by three French individuals. Two of them have now moved to Switzerland to keep everything off the books. It has disturbed me to no end that nobody says anything. Everybody lets it slide with the live and let live attitude. And
who was using it, Sharon? American citizens? French citizens?
No,
both?
No, French citizens.
Mm-hmm.
French citizens using it to live in France, mm-hmm. taking it in from Switzerland on a regular basis, but hiding it in Switzerland. And it disturbs me to no end that there is this live and let live attitude among people around them, not willing to speak up or say anything. I would actually like to speak up and have, in fact, been spending time recently figuring out how to do so. And I'm learning that, A, it's not easy. It's not clear where to go and who you can speak to know that your request will be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I've been told that I should be worried that there could be potential repercussions because the people who know that I'm aware of the scheme and know that I disapprove of it may come after me and my family in some way. So I have not done anything to this date, and it is actually eating away at me.
They may be living in Switzerland, and you may be in a witness protection program. That doesn't sound like a great trade-off.
Who knows? Who knows? But I would like to know, what do I do, and what do people like me do? Who do we turn to, and what should we be thinking?
Gabriel Zuckman, do you have practical advice that goes all the way down to that level? It doesn't sound like this is equivalent to the UBS whistleblower, but Sharon, you know, she's not happy with what she's seen.
Well, I'd like to know the answer, and I'd like to be able to tell you what to do, but I don't. What I'm trying to think about is how to design solutions at the global level that would radically address these tax evasion problems. And for instance, what I think we need, you know, as a world right now is to create a register of financial wealth, ideally a global register of financial wealth. You know, we have registries of real assets, of land and real estate.
True, yeah.
This is recorded in all countries. Mm-hmm. Who owns real estate in New York or everywhere in the country. This is publicly available. It's been out there for centuries. You know, in France, the land registry was created in 1791. You know, it was one of the main, you know, achievements of the revolution. We don't have the same for financial assets. In the 18th century, when the land and real estate registries were created, most of the wealth of people was land and real estate. So
right.
These registers indeed captured most of people's wealth. But now, you know, financial assets account for about half of households' wealth. So we need to do what we do very well for land and real estate, to do it for financial assets. And that would radically address this problem of wealth concealment and offshore tax evasion. I think it's a practical and concrete embodiment of the notion of financial transparency, because then tax authorities, for instance, could use this World Financial Register to check that taxpayers duly report their assets, you know, independently of whatever information mm-hmm. Swiss bankers are willing to provide. This would be enormously useful for statistical purposes as well, just to have a sense of wealth inequality, for instance. Tom, you mentioned at some point that the top 1% in the U.S. owns 22% of U.S. wealth. You know what? Actually, it's the top 0.1%,
excuse
the top
me, yes,
0.1%
yes.
Oh, that okay. owns 22% of U.S. wealth. And even this figure, you know, might understand the reality because we have so little data on wealth and who owns it. So that's what I'm trying to do, you know, in my research and in my book, trying to address these problems really in a radical way, in the sense that in a way that would make these forms of evasion and these statistical problems mm-hmm. that we have at the global level impossible looking forward.
Maybe our law just hasn't kept up, as you say, the financialization of wealth. When it was land, that was on the record. This, off the record. And the $7-plus trillion you're talking about, I've seen it here described as roughly equivalent. This is stashed hidden money, roughly equivalent to the value of all the gold in the world. Holy cow. Harrison in St. Paul, Kansas. Harrison, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Well, the thing I see that I feel is probably wrong with this is there's so much other tax evasion going on. It's just like all the corporations moving to other countries because their taxes will be cheaper. It's not the labor that's cheaper, it's the taxes. So they go over there to hide their wealth so they can save a little more. But I don't think a registry is so much the answer. I think it'd be more lowering the taxes on it. Like, there's a 53% capital gains tax in my area. Which means if I make $1 million, I'm only getting $470,000 of it. The rest of it's going to
53% capital gains tax. Where the heck do you pay that, Harrison? That's way higher than the federal rate. That's ginormous.
Yeah,
if that's true,
way high. But then there's also the income tax. Hell, I pay 40% just in my income taxes. Single male.
So you're saying bring the taxes down, and maybe the money won't go abroad. Gabriel Zuckman, how about it?
Well, you know, I don't think that that's really the solution. I mean, you know, especially in the U.S., the overall level of tax revenue is not really high, you know, compared to other rich economies. There are huge needs in the U.S. in terms of infrastructure, in terms of education, health, and so on. So I'm not sure that the priority for the U.S. right now should be to decrease taxes. You know, that does not sound like what should be done. I think that, you know, the best way to address these tax evasion problems is to take the notion of, you know, financial transparency seriously and try to make progress towards the registry, the financial registry that I described. What I'd like to say is that financial registers already exist today. In each country, they are managed by private financial institutions like the Depository Trust Corporation mm-hmm. in the U.S. or companies known as Euroclear and Clearstream in Europe. So private companies keep the book of who owns what, you know, who owns which equities and bonds and mutual fund shares. They're using this information for, you know, securities settlement, so for the well-functioning of equity and bond markets, which is useful. But I think this information could be used for the public good. It could be used for transparency purposes. It could be used to better enforce taxes. It could be used to have better statistics on wealth and distribution. So the point I'm trying to make in the book is that these financial registers, these private registers that exist, it should be transferred to governments and used in a transparent and democratic way. You know, there is all this information that's mm-hmm. created and that's out there. Let's have a democratic discussion about what's the best way to use it, not only for private purposes, but for the public good.
That's something to talk with your political representatives about. Harrison in Kansas raises the issue of corporate tax evasion. I want to look at the scale and dimension of that issue as well. One more call for Sam in Natick, Massachusetts. Sam, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Good show, as always. Look, you know, I have a very serious issue with this. You know, charity begins at home, which we all know. And mm-hmm. we're talking about this. Why don't we start by ourselves, United States of America, return every single money dumped by world, you know, developing country leaders here in Chase Manhattan Bank, in New York, in Washington, D.C. We know where they are. We know how they got the money. We know that money was looted from the countries which we support by giving them pennies here and there. Why don't we just return it back?
Sam, that is a worthy challenge, and we'll pick it up. Gabriel Zuckman, what about it? I mean, the portion of African wealth, just for example, that is outside of Africa is just enormous. I see 30, I don't know, maybe 50% here. And Sam says, hey, look in the mirror, United States. A bunch of that money is, it may not be in a secret bank account, but it may well be in a New York penthouse or building.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think we are, you know, all... the U.S. and Europe are making this possible, or you know, this huge capital flight out of Africa in particular. They have a big responsibility in making it happen. First of all, because they've never been strong enough, you know, against tax havens and enforce, you know, clear transparency measures like, you know, financial registers or an automatic exchange of bank information between offshore banks and developing countries' tax authorities, but also because a large fraction of, indeed, African wealth of, you know, dictators and so on is actually invested in France, in real estate in Paris, in real estate in New York, mm-hmm. in London. And, you know, authorities in these countries don't seem to care too much about this. And that's a huge, huge problem.
Hiding in plain sight. And Sam calls it out. And I appreciate your call, Sam. And then there's the corporate money abroad that Harrison in Kansas raised. We've heard about that on the campaign trail already. Here's a little bit from Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. First, Sanders on MSNBC's Morning Joe. Talking about how changing corporate tax law could help fund some of his proposed government programs.
If you want tuition-free public colleges and universities, which I believe we will have a tax on Wall Street speculation, which will more than pay for that. We will end the fact that profitable corporations, in some cases in America today, pay zero in federal taxes because they stash their money in the Cayman Islands and in Bermuda.
Cayman Islands and Bermuda stashing away, says Bernie Sanders. And here last week in a press conference, Donald Trump, Republican, unveiled his tax plan. And he talked there about trillions of dollars being held overseas by big corporations.
The number is probably $2.5 trillion. Everybody agrees it should come back. Republicans, Democrats, everybody. They can't make a deal. They don't know how to go about making a deal. The reason companies aren't bringing it back is the tax is onerous. It doesn't make sense to bring it back. And in fact, many companies are leaving the United States.
Because, well, taxes, says Donald Trump. The Hidden Wealth of Nations is the book by Gabriel Zuckman. Gabriel, what about the corporate angle on this? A lot of that is not exactly hidden. It's working the law in maybe borderline ways. Is he right that we're talking about a couple of trillion dollars there? Or what about, you're talking personal wealth at $7.6 trillion stashed. What about the corporate side?
So here what's happening for corporations. Corporations artificially manipulate the location of their profits. So they make profits in the U.S., in the U.K., but they find ways to do as if the profits had been made in Bermuda.
Or Ireland,
mm-hmm. or the Netherlands, or Singapore, or Switzerland, or the Cayman Islands. In all these countries, the effective tax rate on corporate profits is basically 0%.
And we're not talking about fly-by-night companies here. I mean, we're talking very prominent companies, Google, Apple, Etsy, who have been using foreign law to at least make obscure what they're up to.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a number of remarkable investigations by journalists, by the U.S. Senate, you know, on Apple and so on. What's going on now is that 55% of all the foreign profits of all U.S. firms are now artificially shifted to offshore tax havens where the effective corporate tax rate is close to 0%, 55% of all foreign profits. That's an enormous fraction of profits, and this translates into a big stock of wealth, you know, accumulated profits that is kept by corporations offshore, about $2 to $2.5 trillion today. So
Trump
it's not
says
hidden.
Bring taxes down and it will come home.
I don't think so. I don't think, again, that bringing down corporate taxes is the solution. You know, we have in the U.S. right now extreme levels of wealth concentration. Top 0.1% wealth share, 22%. The corporate income tax, it's one of the main ways to tax capital owners, shareholders, okay? If you decrease the corporate income tax, you are decreasing the tax rate for equity owners in the U.S. And equity ownership is extremely concentrated, so you're decreasing taxes for the richest individuals in the U.S. whose share of wealth has been growing so fast recently. So is that really what you want to do? I'm not sure about that.
That is a good question. If it's 0.1% with 22% of the wealth, it doesn't seem like it's crying out to be given a break. But it's already in Donald Trump's tax plan. I'm sure we'll hear more about it. Lawrence Summers, the former U.S. Treasury Secretary, writes about Gabriel Zuckerman's new book. He says, offshore tax evasion is an outrage. He calls the book The Hidden Wealth of Nations, Actionable Economics at its Finest. Gabriel Zuckerman's been with us from the University of California, Berkeley today. He's an assistant professor of economics there. Gabriel Zuckerman, thank you for all your research. Thank you for your time today, and keep the work going.
You.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.